Please be aware that this podcast has reference to drug and alcohol use and paraphernalia and may not be appropriate for some people in early recovery. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Majubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking a treatment provider, which you can easily do at SAMHSA's national helpline at findtreatment.gov or 1-800-622-4357. So in the last episode, we talked about all the issues with ketamine, primarily its recreational use.
And in this episode, we're going to take a minute and look at ketamine and esketamine for the treatment of depression.
So what be esketamine?
Well, ketamine is a mixture of two molecules, esketamine and R-ketamine. Ketamine is an anesthetic drug that is also administered for pain and sedation, so there are legitimate uses for these products. Also, ketamine and esketamine can rapidly and transiently alleviate treatment-resistant unipolar depression, including suicidal ideation, which is one of the main things that they discovered in its use, that it can reduce suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, that's remarkable. Mm-hmm. How quickly or easily should one prescribe ketamine for depression?
Well, we suggest that clinicians prescribe ketamine or esketamine cautiously for depression and only after exhausting other medications. So, for example, one of the treatment recommendations for the use of esketamine, which is marketed under Spravato, is a person will have to be deemed treatment resistant. And by treatment resistant, they mean that the person has failed at least two antidepressants.
So I just want to remind the audience about who Dr. Ketley Daniels is. She is a practicing psychiatrist who has experience with esketamine. And so this is primarily going to be information from Dr. Daniels. It seems, Ketley, that ketamine acts on multiple receptors, and perhaps this is the reason for its effectiveness?
Ketamine is an opioid receptor agonist, which means that it works similarly to, because it uses those same receptors. There's evidence that activation of opioid receptors is involved in ketamine's antidepressant effects, but also it works on the NMDA and AMPA receptors, which is receptors that work on the glutamate, which is a new frontier for psychiatry, by the way, looking at the glutamate.
Right, and that's why in people who are on Suboxone, which works on the opioid receptor, the mu receptor, we have studies which show that Suboxone has antidepressant qualities as well. Mm-hmm. And patients will report that. Yeah. So it's very interesting. And I tell people that, you know, it's all about receptors.
If your receptors
like a particular medication / drug, that's what they're going, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to remember and go for. So IV intravenous ketamine until the recent past was prescribed in academic settings only for treatment-resistant depression in which psychiatrists collaborated with anesthesiologists. Because ketamine originally and still is a drug for a medication for anesthesia. Mm-hmm. But now ketamine infusions are becoming increasingly available at freestanding outpatient clinics in which treatment is dispensed by physicians such as anesthesiologists who often have no experience or very limited experience treating depression. And that is really the case in our city, Toledo, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And also patients have been given oral ketamine to take at home. And it is also available in intramuscular, intranasal, subcutaneous, and sublingual formulations.
Yeah, and there's still a lot of studies being done trying to figure out the optimal dose of IV ketamine and how much and how long to use it for depression. And these formulations are available in many ways, as you've just listed, but the oral formulation is not very bioavailable, meaning that it does not work as well as some of the others. And the intranasal formulation is problematic. However, we do have that available with esketamine, with Spravato.
In that case, do you think that intravenous treatment is the best?
Clinically, it sounds like the IV is the best, but it is more problematic to use and it's much easier to do the intranasal, but the IV is once or twice you can administer it, and symptoms can rapidly diminish. Yes.
So you have experience with ketamine and esketamine particularly. So tell us what the side effects are. What should we look for?
I definitely have experience using esketamine, although not the IV ketamine. But one of the primary side effects or complaints is that it can cause dissociation or psychosis. It may be transitory, however, it can be significant. The ketamine can cause some hallucinations, confusion, and sensory disturbances, which when we talk about the use of it in depression, you will see that we require that the patient comes prepared to sit with us for a couple of hours mm-hmm. and that they do not drive themselves home, because that is a significant issue. There are also cardiovascular side effects like increase in heart rate and blood pressure. And once they've taken the initial insulfation, we'll just have them sit there for 45 minutes, monitor the blood pressure to make sure they're okay. Mm. And then another hour later, check their blood pressure, because it can increase their blood pressure. And it can cause some chest pains and palpitations. Can also cause anxiety, blurred vision, dizziness, and headaches.
So coming to the addictive piece, the longer term use of ketamine causes other side effects. So there's abuse and addiction. More and more studies are documenting how ketamine is abused and causes addiction. There can be neurotoxicity, but this is primarily seen in rodent studies in which the structure of the brain is affected by ketamine and causes cognitive changes. And I was amused to learn about bladder toxicity, severe enough to cause surgery, and liver toxicity, meaning ketamine can cause injury to the liver.
Yeah. There's nothing really benign that is not native to the body that we can put in our bodies that really causes no problems as far as medications are concerned. And people need to be aware of that. So if ketamine is going to be used, the patient should be under the care of a psychiatrist who has tried other options for treatment-resistant depression, and there's a need for the use of ketamine. Randomized trials have shown that IV ketamine and intranasal esketamine can rapidly improve symptoms of depression. Yeah.
So what are the side effects of esketamine?
Similar to ketamine itself, and it includes anxiety, increased blood pressure, dissociation, dizziness, nausea, sedation, vertigo. And I would say most people, in my experience, had some mild transient symptoms of most of these, which dissipated by the end of the 2 hours that they are with us.
So I think it would be helpful, since you have experience with using the esketamine, if you would want to describe to us what your experience with esketamine has been.
And I'm going to touch briefly on the IV ketamine, which is still under study, and there are several studies that are being done even now to determine the proper dose and duration and frequency of treatment. So with the IV ketamine, you should be seen or being treated by a physician. So in the office, they will set up the IV, and they have a dose of 0.5 to 0.1 milligram per kilogram. And you come in, you sit, you get the IV in, and 2 or 3 times a week for 2 weeks, you'll come in for the treatment. And most people, after the first infusion, feel better. The symptoms have diminished. It's well tolerated because they have to stay there and be monitored. Now, after the 2 weeks, you'll be assessed and see, where do we go from here? That is still something that's being decided. Do we continue it once a week? Do we continue it after 2 weeks? Do we come back once a month? They have tried some smaller studies. One study...
Before you go to the study, I have a quick question.
Okay.
When you say that the patient comes in and they have to be monitored by a physician, mm-hmm. I'm assuming that that physician is an anesthesiologist, and the decision to use IV ketamine has been made by the psychiatrist. Is that what you're saying?
That should be the case, but there are some psychiatrist office who are also doing IV treatment.
Directly. Without the anesthesiologist there. Okay, I see.
Correct.
I get it.
Mm-hmm. But I was just going to make a joke and think it depends on your insurance coverage, you know, what kind of risk you want to take. Because even if you do ECT treatment, years ago when I was considering doing that, you have to have a higher level of risk management.
Right.
So in this particular case, they had these 4 individuals come in for treatment, and they treated them once a week, several weeks. But they found out shortly after the waning of the dose, within a couple of weeks, the symptoms returned.
Oh.
And they needed to be treated again, maybe once a month. And they tried it for a couple of months and found that once a month did keep them symptom-free for several months.
So you're talking about chronic treatment?
They're talking about chronic treatment.
Oh, my.
Yeah, chronic treatment. And I think I shared with you recently about I had one patient who was getting shock treatment years ago. And it was like a beautiful awakening after the treatment. She was almost catatonic in her depression. But after ECT, she just brightened up and was conversant and engaged, and affect had improved. But she needed once a month ECT treatment. And that's the only sad thing with some of the treatment we offer in most of medicine, unless it's an acute treatment like a UTI, is that you have to stay in treatment.
Right. Because with psychiatric issues and with addiction issues, I tell people that patients that they're not curable. Mm-mm. They're only treatable. Mm-hmm. And then I like to make a joke about personality disorders, because there's been so much of narcissistic personality disorder on our national political stage that personality disorders are not treatable. And psychiatrists, is it true that psychiatrists limit personality disorders to 5 patients total in their practice? Is that true, Ketley?
No, I don't think so. I think sometimes they come in waves. And one of the things I decided years ago is that everyone should carry their share, because these patients can be very heavy.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think we treat whoever comes to our place, because even though you may have a character disorder, you still have a primary psychiatric diagnosis. You can be bipolar, you can be depressed, you can be anxious. You can have that along with.
Right, because it can generate that too. Like anxiety would be generated by a personality disorder too.
Not necessarily being generated, it's just comorbid.
Oh, it's comorbid, okay.
You just have this also. And many things in medicine, for example, diabetes and high blood pressure, and many things we treat, but we don't cure. And there are some treatments that work better than others. But patients would rather take a pill than make lifestyle changes. We know that.
Right. And just like addiction is defined as a chronic disease, but there are in medicine, like high blood pressure, diabetes, asthma, they are not really curable. But, you know, obviously your pneumonia is curable.
Right.
Your little fracture is fixable.
It's fixable.
Yeah, but psychiatric and addiction issues are primarily only treatable.
Yeah. And when we say psychiatric, we have to also consider the global umbrella of psychiatry, because you have often what we treat, we call an adjustment disorder. That means somebody has an issue that surfaced and they need help. That is treatable. They go on with their lives and then they come back only as needed. So it depends on the diagnosis.
Like a grief reaction. Right.
So with the IV, with the esketamine, one of the recommendations is that treatment has to be individualized. How often and how long for the duration, it has to be individualized. But most of us do not go into the ketamine. We will sign up for the esketamine treatment, which is much more doable. When we were doing it, and many reasons why we no longer offer that service, but with esketamine, you're provided with 2 canisters that the doses 56 milligrams or 84 milligrams, but most people use 56 milligrams at the first session. So the patient comes in, we assess them, we check their blood pressure, pulse, and just monitor them. They're comfortably set, and then we offer them the canisters. They have to inhale it themselves, so they'll inhale it in one nostril followed by the other. And after they're done, and we recommend that they don't eat or drink right before because of the nausea and other issues.
An aspiration, possible.
So they will inhale the medication, and then we have them sit quietly in the room where we monitor them in case they have any adverse reactions like dissociation or hallucination. And then we check the vitals. And if the vitals are normal, then we have them sit there for another hour, make sure it's good before they leave. And if it's not, then they stay with us. And if it's really bad, then we would have to get emergent care for them. We haven't had to do that, but it works really nicely. And the beauty of the esketamine product is that a number of people, after the first session, came back and said, I feel so much better. And so, but for the first 4 weeks, we're giving it to them twice a week, 2 hours at a time. So it takes a chunk of time out of your life come sit there.
Yeah.
And then you have to have someone drive you home. But they feel better. But here's the problem, as with anything else, it's not sustainable. So then we have to decide how often to do the repeated treatment. Is it every 2 weeks? We did that for a while, and then once a month. And I had several people that we ended up once a month providing them with the esketamine with benefit, and they continue on that. And most insurance companies were covering it.
So my question is that while I was preparing for this, it said that the side effects were dissociation and psychotomimetic, and I was like, oh, so it can cause psychosis.
That's correct.
So when does a psychosis develop generally? Like, is it like in a couple, 3 days, or is it immediate?
Within the first half hour of being on it, you can have distorted reality, yes. And fortunately, I did not have not one case of that. Some people did feel a little bit out of body, like a derealization or depersonalization mm-hmm. experience, but I saw no frank psychosis, although it can produce psychosis, yes.
Yeah, I found that very interesting, but yeah. Psychotomimetic.
I like that word too.
Yeah, long.
I like that. But with offering S-ketamine, as we talked about earlier, we have to be registered with this registry, and they monitor its dispensation, and then we have to make sure that the pharmacy is contacted and the pharmacy delivers it to us. The patients cannot take them home. The pharmacy delivered the day before, the day of, et cetera, and et cetera. So there are strict guidelines for this use of medication.
And it's so funny, like in our previous episode, we talked about how ketamine, how esketamine is so regulated, and mm-hmm. you're describing that.
Right.
But you know what? As far as the market economy is concerned, they say, oh, the heck with that. We're just going to do our own thing.
Right.
And we don't need no regulation.
Nope. We do what we want to do.
And yeah.
Unfortunately, I think people, and physicians included, they do whatever the market will bear. I mean, this
right.
this queen person was getting $11,000 for,
yeah.
you know. And so, which is sad, but that's the kind of, that's the society we live in.
Right. It just mm-hmm. interferes in everything.
Mm-hmm. So, in my opinion, I think the use of esketamine is a good idea for the patient who is, what's the word? The person who should benefit from it should get it, and it should be monitored by a physician. That's what my recommendation would be. And I think there are those who could benefit from the ketamine, but we need a little bit more study to see how we should prescribe that. And then it's one more tool in our arsenal, this esketamine.
When do you get to that point of wanting to use the esketamine, being that, you know, we have such a huge number of psychotropics, which is like a big burden for physicians to do pharmacology and try to remember all of the medications. So we have a plethora of medications that are there for the treatment of unipolar major depression. So when you were using esketamine, how do you come to that that point of using esketamine?
In my practice, often the people that I treated with esketamine, the Spravato, were referred to me because I was on the panel to prescribe it. I think I only had one of my own patients that I prescribed it to, because for the most part, everyone seems to be pretty good on the cocktail that we present
yes,
to
right,
them.
Yes, right, right.
Yeah.
Because we have so many choices.
We have so many choices. And this is just an aside. I was thinking of someone that I referred recently for Spravato. And this woman was very, very, very sick. And when I first inherited her, very, very sick, and she had been through, she brought me a list of medications that she had tried. The list had, no exaggeration, every product that I could think of. And so someone comes to you like that, having
right,
been on
right.
everything, what do you do?
You didn't try ECT with her?
I don't remember if she tried ECT.
Mm.
I don't remember. But most people are not fan of ECT, because I think Oprah, when she did her thing on ECT
yeah.
years ago.
She told me.
But ECT works. I want the audience to hear ECT works. And some people just, that's what they need. But I don't remember if she had tried that. But when she came to me on all those medications, I had to start all over again. At the end of the journey, and I don't want anyone to judge me, she was on a host of medications. But everything I gave her helped to this level, but no more.
Hmm.
And I added this, it helped for this level and no more. So I couldn't really stop this one, because it did do this, and this one did that. We ended up at least, she was on maybe 6 different medications, but she was cruising along just functioning,
mm.
but she was no longer as symptomatic as she was. So I saw her recently, and the family wanted her to consider esketamine. And I said, oh, that's not a bad idea. I'll make the referral, made the referral, send her. She comes back to me recently, and I have to make sure she's listening to this podcast. She came back to me recently, and she said, I didn't do it. I said, but why not? She said she didn't want to spend all that time in the office twice a week and having somebody come. She just didn't have the transportation, all the other things. And I understood. But she said, incidentally, I'm feeling better again.
which you know, it's really interesting how patients decide. So I've had patients who have come in with chest pain, and I have decided that they needed to go to the emergency department, or other people who needed hospitalization. And patients have told me, I can't go to the hospital. I have a cat.
Yes.
Or I have had a patient tell me, I have an appointment with the hairdresser. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your mouth, you suddenly realize that your mouth is open.
Yeah.
It's like, so patients make really crazy decisions.
Yeah. She was, her family member who brought her was very concerned about her because she was almost, again, like a catatonic individual when she presented that in that session. But the nature of the beast is that the symptoms wax and wane. But at the end of the day, we as physicians, we walk the journey with them. We support them, we encourage them, we make adjustments as we can. And then we have these products that can also help. But unfortunately, these products are often abused.
Why did you stop using esketamine, like in your practice?
Oh, the list is long, but it was very cumbersome after a while. Because as a physician, I don't have any other physicians in the office. So I have to stop and check the vitals, check this, check. It was so much to do for one person.
Right. Mm,
it was too much, yeah.
But and the referrals that you were getting were from other psychiatrists, because I would assume so.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's a good drug. And it is. And one last thing, too, for the audience to be aware of, for us, as we prescribe it, even the canisters we have to dispose of appropriately.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
That it's not abused. Yes.
Yeah. And there is this, the market economy doing every kind of stuff with ketamine.
Yeah.
Yep. So what would you say is the takeaway from this episode?
Well, I think basically that ketamine and esketamine should be considered in the treatment of treatment-resistant depression. And I think you have to find the appropriate person to prescribe it. And you also have to be aware that the things we hear on the internet, on the radio, on television about these products may be true, but they're also proper use of these products, and they do work. And if you need them, and if your mood is such that you're having suicidal thoughts, these do work. Yes.
Oh, that's excellent. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. Our next episode will deal with the marijuana monster, if something else does not jinx it yet again. And we do hope you will join us. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Mahjabeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Do share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that drug use causes. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. And with all the challenges of life, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. We hope to see you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.